Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. We have to talk about, again, our spending, this budget. Government continues to be shut down here. The budget's at the center of it, right? Extended subsidies for Obamacare, a big part of it, as we've talked here as well. There's some ridiculous spending plans the Democrats are putting forth to bring their ideals, their liberal ideals across the world. That should be a no-go. In these discussions here, and they are a no-go for Republicans, but Democrats are a different story here. We're going to talk about this budget and this shutdown here with Chris Towner. He is with the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. All right, who's really on board here with seriously trying to get spending under control in the federal government? You know, I know we talk, and it's sort of tongue-in-cheek, but there's truth to it as well. If I'm going to go out there and cut everybody's benefits, I'm not going to get elected. I'm not going to get reelected. That's for sure. But you gotta have maybe a populace that has the guts to understand this. And you certainly have to have, I think, some leaders, if they're leaders or if they're politicians. But we need to have some leaders who are really talking earnestly about this. There are those who are on the side pushing that. And this is one group, and I've appreciated the stuff that comes out of their website, Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. I mean, plain and simple, it makes sense. It's CRFB.org. And Chris Towner joins us as policy director. Good morning, Chris. How's it going?
Good morning. Doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. Appreciate that. This weight, this burden of this national debt. I don't think we're feeling it right now. Maybe in some ways it's starting to show. But for me, it's a very critical issue because there's no sustainability in this plan going forward. Give us your... From your committee standpoint and what you have learned and you know, and tell us who you are and what you guys do. And then let's talk about what we can do to get government spending back in control.
Yeah, absolutely. So Committee for Responsible Federal Budget, we're a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization in Washington, D.C. And we really do take bipartisan credibility importantly. We have members of both prominent budget leaders on our board of directors. Yep. And we really advocate for reducing spending and increasing revenues. And we try to do that in ways that are really good for the economy and, you know, and help people in like the fairest way possible. But, you know, we're in a really bad situation right now. Just last week, the federal debt, gross federal debt, hit $38 trillion. And I think that's really hard for people to kind of, you know, encapsulate into an idea of like, oh, what does $38 trillion mean? It almost seems meaningless because of how large it is. But really, the way we think about it is that in comparison to the size of the economy, the debt held by the public, which is about $30 trillion, is about equal to the size of the economy. And that's really large. That's the largest we've had it since just after World War II. And so what we would like to do is stabilize that debt growth and perhaps get it on a downward path as a share of the economy. So, like, we're not going to ever really be paying down the national debt. I think, you know, maybe very long term we could look at that as a, 30-year goal. But really what we want to do is make the economy grow faster than the debt. And you really have to do that through a combination of spending reforms and revenue reforms. There's no wishful way to get out of it. Like, we can't grow our way out of the debt. U.S. economic growth is projected to average about 2% over the next couple decades. There's really no way that we're going to be able to grow faster than our debt is growing. And we have a very large mismatch between how much we're spending and how much we're taking in revenue. It's about $2 trillion on average over the next decade. So It's a very large problem to try to think through, but there are solutions, right? There are a lot of ideas out there for how we can, you know, at the margins, cut some of that spending or increase some of that revenue. But you have to be willing to put the entire budget on the table to get there.
Yeah. What does our budget look like? If we take $2 trillion out of the budget right now, in your mind, okay, sensibly take it out. What does that do to the country? What does our country look like after 1 year of equalized revenue spending, or 2 years or 5 years?
Right. So on the spending side, that would be, so we currently spend about $7 trillion a year. So we're talking about cutting that down to $5 trillion. Or on the revenue side, you know, vice versa, we spend about $5 trillion, add that up to $7 trillion. It sounds a lot easier when you put it that way than it could actually be. We're most of our federal budget is spent on what we call mandatory programs. So that's about 60% of the budget. Kind of, it happens on autopilot. Congress does not even decide on it annually.
Yeah.
And those, the largest drivers of those are Social Security. That's the largest federal program. But then they're all federal health care programs. So most significantly is Medicare, but we also have subsidies for buying insurance on the ACA exchanges. We also have Medicaid. We have the Children's Health Insurance Program. That's all federal health care programs. And then the other big pot of mandatory spending is what we would call safety net programs. So that's things like SNAP or food stamps, and that usually kick on when the economy is doing pretty poorly. And then, you know, that makes up about, you know, almost two-thirds of the budget. Then the next biggest pot of money is you have this discretionary spending. And that's what's really going on with this government shutdown right now, is that there's no agreement on how to fund the discretionary spending. And that's only about a quarter of the budget. We're talking about half of that going towards defense programs, so the military generally, and then the other half being about for non-defense programs. And that's what I like to think of with everything that the government does that, like, you think of on a daily basis, like, oh, it's the Department of Education, Transportation, you know, Health and Human Services. Like, that's the core funding for all of those departments. And then there's a third, very scary little pot of money, which is interest on the national debt. And we spend about 11 or 12% of our budget on interest on the national debt right now. And that's only projected to go upward. That's a lot of money that we're just spending on interest and not getting anything out of. We're spending almost $1 trillion per year on interest because we have so much debt. The federal budget is very out of balance, and trying to get it even, I wouldn't even say balance is a good goal right now, but if we were to try to just cut our deficits in half, we're borrowing about 6% of the economy right now. If we were to borrow about 3% of the economy, we'd be in much better footing.
Chris Towner, again, is with us, policy director at the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Okay, is the simple question, the will in Congress. How do we charge up the will in Congress, especially for those who maybe are not on board, like others may be? You're going to – there's cuts. I suppose it's either increase revenue or decrease your spending. So somebody's going to come on there and, you know, we're spending $2 trillion more than we're making every year. I propose $2 trillion in cuts. That guy or gal is not around 2 years later to see that through. How do we engage our lawmakers with a strong enough will to get this done? Because it's going to hurt.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think what you have to do is turn this from, you know, a third rail issue into a political winner. And we've seen that successfully done in the past. In the 1990s, President Clinton and the Republican Congress came together and they balanced the budget. And they made balancing the budget a key feature of their platforms because voters wanted that to happen. I mean, we saw it in the early 2010s as well. The Tea Party was fundamentally a movement built on reducing federal spending and getting closer to a balanced budget. And it was quite successful, right? So we've had periods where we've been able to get in a better situation because voters have demanded it, but we're just not going to get there unless voters do demand it. And I mean, I think there's a lot of cause for why voters should be starting to demand that kind of thing. I think most acutely in the last few years, we've seen inflation skyrocket, right? And inflation is still pretty elevated. We're looking at inflation about 3% right now, is what, according to the government from last week. So we want to get a grasp, a handle on lowering inflation. We're going to have to start lowering our borrowing as well. But even apart from inflation, you know, interest rates are really the biggest result of having so much federal borrowing. You know, mortgage rates have remained pretty elevated. We're talking about, you know, like 6%, 7% mortgage rates, while the federal funds rate, which the Federal Reserve controls, has been going down. We've been seeing, you know, long-term interest rates going up. All of that is because of how much borrowing we have. And, you know, this is starting to hit people's pocketbooks. This is starting to become a real issue. And God forbid we have some sort of fiscal crisis in which interest rates skyrocket and borrowing becomes totally impossible because of how high interest rates are. Then people will really start noticing it. So we have to turn this from, again, from a third rail issue into a political winner. And we've seen it done before. It really just takes folks coming together and demanding some action on this issue.
I appreciate that. It's a legitimate concern that we're going to continue to spend like this. Look at our budget now. Our government shut down. The Republicans passed out of the House, can't get it out of the Senate, a very clean resolution. Why don't you tell our audience what that means, and then talk about that $1.5 billion proposal that the Democrats have shut the government down for. Talk about what's in there. I got 3 minutes before we take a break.
Yeah, absolutely. So the funding in Congress, it's supposed to happen by the end of the fiscal year. The fiscal year ends September 30th, and Congress is supposed to come together. It has to be bipartisan because it has to survive the filibuster in the Senate, and they're supposed to come to an agreement on funding levels. Well, we haven't done that on time by the end of the fiscal year in almost 30 years. The last time was in 1996. So what happened is the House voted on what we would call a clean continuing resolution. It says, you know what, we'll take 2025 spending levels and we'll rubber stamp them for 2026, at least for the interim, so that we can come to an agreement. And, you know, that's how we've pretty much put off shutdowns in the past. We saw that a lot over the last few years, and it was pretty non-controversial. Democrats in Congress have chosen not to vote for that. And a lot of the reason they're talking about is ACA subsidies, which I can go into a lot more detail about.
We will, yeah.
But yes, there's a very large subsidy cliff that will happen at the end of this year if nothing is done to prevent that from happening. And then they added in another $1 trillion worth of canceling the Medicaid cuts and other health care cuts from the One Big Beautiful Bill that passed over the summer. So we're talking about a Democratic proposal that would add about $1.5 trillion to deficits, which is just totally, this should be a total non-starter. No one should be talking about that. It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. And those things that are in there, we've delineated them a time or two. They are rather unbelievable. Some of the spending that Democrats or liberals in this country want us to do overseas. Give us a couple of examples. You've been through this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what we typically see in what we call the appropriations process is that there are a lot of priorities for global health programs tend to be one of the larger ones that are more controversial. It's, you know, doing foreign aid for specific, sometimes it's to try to spread democracy. Sometimes it's to try to, you know, like end different epidemics in other countries. That's what we see with most of the foreign aid part of it. I mean, the rest of the budget, the more controversial things that should be controversial that have been proposed by the minority is to, you know, undo all of the spending cuts that were really hard fought from the tax cuts that happened over the summer.
We're going to get on to some solutions here. Chris Towner is with us, Policy Director at the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, CRFB. Let me get you their website again. There's a lot of good stuff on there. Social Security, a nice one there. They got a new idea about for Social Security, employer compensation tax. Maybe we can get into that, but also a discussion there about Social Security, the COLA cap, offsetting the ACA subsidy extensions. You know, if you're going to spend money, then where's that money coming from. We haven't always done that math, and there are people in Congress who are pushing for that. Welcome back here. It's From Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. We do this frequently because, again, it's for me, it's urgent for our kids that we don't leave them an unsustainable revenue future. Chris, good morning again. Thank you for being here. I appreciate that, and I appreciate what you guys do. A lot of good stuff on that website, so I do encourage people to go there, CFRB. I got that right. CRFP. Thank you. Yeah. I got to write that down in bigger letters. CRFB.org. ACA. Okay. They passed it. You know, I think the original spending projections were under $1 trillion. That quickly went away. I think they're spending, what is it? Almost $2 trillion now. And you looked at here with some of the work that you guys have done. You said that we spend $5 trillion a year on healthcare. We've got some issues to solve. What's a good path forward to really get those on the plate and then start parsing through some ideas? What ideas are we looking at?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think just to take a step back and think through this issue, because I think it's a really complicated issue.
Yeah,
You know, in 2010, we passed the Affordable Care Act, and we included subsidies for folks to buy insurance on these exchanges. And the exchanges were supposed to be state-based, but some of them are federal-based. It's a little complicated, but how the formula worked was that if you made up to 400% of poverty, and back then that was probably about $40,000, you were eligible for a subsidy. And then everyone over that wasn't eligible for any subsidies. And so when the pandemic hit and lawmakers decided that we needed to make sure that everyone was able to get insurance, you know, health insurance at the time, and whether or not that was related to the pandemic, you know, it was pretty debatable. But in 2021, we passed this expansion of those subsidies. So not only did we make the subsidies more generous, but we also said that anyone would be eligible for the subsidy up to there's no income limit, and it would limit people's premiums to 8.5% of their income. And so it's a very generous subsidy for some people. And for others, you know, it ends up, you know, kind of being a wash. But what Congress did was they only passed it for 1 year back then. And then in 2022, they re-upped it in the Inflation Reduction Act, and they passed it for an additional 2 years. I think it was 2 years at a time. So now at the end of December, those subsidies will expire.
And that was not by accident. They wanted them to expire in an upcoming election year too.
Yeah. Well, part of it was that they were set to expire because it was just really costly to extend them. It's about $25 to $30 billion a year. It's a little cheaper now than it was back then because of some of the changes that we've made to health insurance regulations. But, it was set to expire, and it was always going to be a conversation of, okay, well, what are we going to do? So at the same time, and I think this is where people get really confused, is health insurance premiums were already going up pretty rapidly. We're looking at, in some places of the country, like a 10 to 20% increase in health insurance premiums. So if you get the double duty of both your enhanced subsidy expiring and your insurance premium already going up, some people are going to be paying double what they were paying before those subsidies. So now there's a conversation of, well, should we extend them? Again, it's about $25 billion a year to extend them. That's quite expensive. We could come up with, you know, some offsetting ways to do it, or we could make those subsidies less generous, but more generous than the original ACA subsidies. That's some ideas that we've had. But the bottom line is that if we're going to pass any extension, we should either pay for it or actually more than pay for it. Let's reduce deficits alongside those extensions by, you know, coming up with even larger spending cuts to outweigh the $25 billion a year increase that we're talking about.
Where do those spending cuts come from? Because we're talking about large spending cuts. And I want to preface this as well, because it's not like that we want it to hurt. We don't want it to. What we're trying to avoid is some putting our hurt onto our next generations or even the generation following that. We don't want people to hurt, but we need to walk ourselves out of this. What's a good balancing act in this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a common misconception that spending cuts always results in fewer benefits to people. That's actually not the case. Mm-hmm. In some cases, when we talk about cutting spending, first of all, we're rarely talking about cutting it in like the specific year. So we're not necessarily saying in 2026 we're going to spend, you know, X dollars less. But what we'll do is put in place policies that make spending grow at a much like lower level. So a great example of getting a good spending cut that actually doesn't hurt people very much or hurt people at all, really, is the way that we spend. An example is the way that we spend money on Medicare. The Medicare program has a bunch of very strange rules for how it makes payments. But one of them is that if a hospital performs one service and a physician's office performs that same service, we pay the hospital more and we pay the physician's office less. And we're not paying the hospital more for any reason other than the fact that it's done in a hospital. So one idea that we've come up with is called site neutral payments, is saying, why don't we just pay the same amount regardless of whether it's done in a hospital or a physician's office? And it's cheaper to do it in a physician's office because there's a lot less overhead. So if we do that, then we encourage doctors to be performing those things in physician offices, and we get a lot of savings out of it. We could get somewhere around $200 billion over the next decade if we were to implement that very, you know, obvious reform. I think when you explain it to people, they're like, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But, you know, there's too much demagoguing around the issues. Like, yeah. No one in Congress wants to talk about Medicare because you're immediately told that you're going to, you know, be kicking grandma off of her health insurance. Like, no, that's not happening. What we're talking about is how to make the government more efficient.
Well, and we gotta get past that. I think a lot of people are out there just giving lip service. Oh, yeah, we got to find a fix to Social Security. And then they'll name a post office. Right. These are tough issues, and spending is another one of those tough issues. So I guess I am just hopeful that our public, you know, grabs a hold of this and understands these numbers. When you're talking about 5% or 500% above poverty level, you know, you're talking about somebody who's making $75,000 a year still being a single person still being eligible for government subsidies. You know, that whole we want to buy these votes thing, it's so much present in our politics nowadays. Give me some more plans. So something that's solid that we have ideas that we can either, you know, at least coalesce a conversation around.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would love to talk more about Social Security because that seems to be the hardest one that folks to talk about. It is the one thing that President Biden and then Speaker McCarthy agreed on was that they didn't want to talk about Social Security. But the reality is that in just 7 years, Social Security's retirement trust fund, which is what we use to fund our benefits for current seniors, it'll be out of all reserves. So at that point, the law says that the only money that we can spend on Social Security benefits is the money that's coming from payroll taxes. We know, based on our projections and based on, you know, looking at what the workforce is going to be like in 7 years, is that the amount that's coming in will be only enough to afford about 76% of benefits, or about a 24% benefit cut. You know, that's a very large benefit cut. Sometimes I talk to college students and they're like, 24% doesn't seem like that big of a deal. And I'm like, okay, well, if you told me to just, you know, keep working my job and not get paid for a quarter of the year, would I keep doing it? Absolutely not. Like, that's not how I would want to do it at all. But there are a bunch of ideas out there that we have to really, you know, bring in either more revenue into the system or to help, you know, slow benefit growth. So one of the fundamental problems that we have with the Social Security program is that benefits grow way faster than the amount that we put into the trust funds. So you can either tackle that with some revenue changes. So one we've come up with is called this employer compensation tax. And it essentially says we're not going to raise people's taxes, but what we're going to say is employers who already pay half of the payroll tax, instead of just taxing wages, let's tax everything that employers contribute to a person's compensation. And, you know, that's a lot of things, like health insurance benefits. That's a very large thing that employers are spending money on, but we don't tax any of that. We don't get any of the revenue out of that. And it would be much simpler, for employers to kind of implement that kind of reform. And it tends to be more tax efficient. It doesn't end up preferencing one type of compensation over another as the current tax code does. So that's on the revenue side. On the spending side, one of our more novel solutions that we've come up recently is a COLA cap. So the COLA is the cost of living adjustment. We shorthand it for everything in DC. And just last week, the Social Security Administration announced that next year there will be a 2.8% increase to seniors' benefits for Social Security based on inflation. Now, a few problems with that is, one is it uses this very outdated measure of inflation to increase those benefits, so that's not really reflective of people's costs, and it tends to overstate inflation a little bit. On the other hand, that means that someone who, for say a married couple, there are some married couples that are collecting nearly $100,000 of benefits right now, the people who paid the most into the they paid the maximum taxes over their lifetimes. They're collecting about $100,000 a year. I don't think that they need the same cost of living adjustment as folks who are collecting $30,000 a year. So what we could do is we could cap that cost of living adjustment for those most well-off seniors and keep cost of living adjustment the same for people below that. And that kind of helps solve that problem of we're spending too much and taking in too little revenue because we'll be spending a little bit less. So those are a few ideas. You know, people don't like to talk about raising their retirement age, but personally, I'm in my 30s. I don't think it's ridiculous for me to have to work until I'm 70. I know that there are some people out there who can't work until they're in their 70s, and that's fine. We put in different protections to say maybe we have different types of ages for retiring based on what your profession was or what your income level was. There are a bunch of ideas out there. We have to start implementing them fast because we only have 7 years now.
Yeah, and our government, again, is they're not on board like they need to be. Let's take a real quick call. Hey, Skip, I'm going to run out of time. Sorry, I didn't know you were on the line here. Skip, listening in Hamilton, got a question here with it's Chris Towner with the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget. Chris, Skip, good morning.
Good morning, Tom, and thank you. And for being in your 30s, young man, I think you're brilliant the way that you lay things out so that you simplify them so that old guys like me can understand them. And then I think you should travel around the state of Montana and give little talks or big talks to lots of people so they can better understand the situation. I was curious about at the federal level, is it still smart to think about something like a convention of states as a way to have an amendment that makes it a law to balance the federal budget?
Hey, Skip, I got about a minute, so I'm going to leave it at that. Okay. Good question. Let's throw it out there. Yep. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate the question. I think that balanced budget amendments are often well-intentioned and maybe not feasible right now. I've heard the idea of this convention of states. There's the former U.S. Comptroller General, Dave Walker, has kind of said that like that's the way that we should be going forward. I think it's an interesting idea, and I think we should pursue whatever means it takes to try to get fiscal issues at the top of the agenda and getting our debt under control.
Yeah, I don't think that Congress is going to fix it. That's why I've been more and more interested in the states doing something about it, too, because we have to live within our means. And you know, the whole idea of being responsible is taking responsibility. This Congress and the federal government doesn't seem to have responded in that regard. Look, we're $38 trillion already in debt. Chris, I'm out of time, but I'm going to keep you on speed dial, okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Any final thoughts?
Happy to come on anytime.
You got any final thoughts for us? Just tell us we can do it.
No, just check out our website, crfb.org. We're definitely happy to hear from folks. And, you know, actually, we will be going around the country to give talks. I've done that several times before. And we're going to be doing a new series on Social Security in the coming months and the next year. So hopefully we'll make it out to Montana.
We'll be talking a lot because we need solutions on the table and ideas talked about. Chris Towner again. Hey, thanks, Chris. Appreciate that. Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.